Pain? Well, an expert panel will provide some relief. That's on Inside Health later this evening at 9 o'clock.
On BBC iPlayer.
Step right in. Perfect timing.
The East End is ever-changing.
What is this? Scooter!
The Order has entered the 1960s. Barely 8 years late.
But the midwives of Nanata's house are forever constant.
You have a home here now, and purpose, and people who love you.
Call the midwife.
We will be with you every step of the way.
Watch on BBC iPlayer.
Now on BBC Radio 4, Mark Watson, his house band Flo and Joan, and this week's special guest Esther Manito fight their natural Wednesday child leanings towards woe and instead deliver pure joy as they talk a bit about life.
One, ooh. Mark Watson talks. What a surprise. Mark Watson talks. Will he ever stop? Mark Watson talks a bit about life. Better be good.
Good evening.
I found that a bit passive-aggressive. I might have been overreacting. I think it's the better be good thing. It just puts a little bit of pressure on before we've really got the audience on. So anyway, it's fine.
If you were confident, you wouldn't feel that pressure, I don't think.
Have you met me? Welcome to the show that has already been called Mark Watson Talks a Bit About Life. We have to register it in advance for the listings. I'm Mark Watson, a Wednesday's child full of woe, ordained by fate to be a total miserable bastard. Obviously, that's not really the vibe that works for a comedy show, so I thought I would try and overcompensate with some high-energy audience warm-up stuff. This is based on a format which I've seen Americans do successfully. Ready? OK. Are you ready?
Yes!
That's right, but you had very little option there. I'm Mark Watson, and I've come here to... Oh, yeah, why not?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Shouldn't it be something rousing?
Is this or nothing?
Oh, sorry.
Fine. So we're going to do high-energy audience warm-up, but with gentle lounge. I'm Mark Watson, and I've come here to do stand-up comedy and kick ass, but I already kicked several asses on the way here. So what's left? Stand-up comedy, very good. Some people just went for comedy, that also does. It's only if you yell opera or something we're in trouble here. I came here to make jokes and file my tax return, but the 14-digit payment reference is not being accepted by the website, so we better do some. Yes, this is working. I came here to offer up some Roy observations and make fresh lemonade, but I've forgotten to bring 140 grams of caster sugar, and without that, the lemonade will be unpalatably bitter. We're just going to have to... The answer was offer up some Roy observations, but it's not easy. Yeah, I'm worried if anything, the music whipped them into too much of a frenzy, but it's fine. If you found that difficult, well, me too. High energy hectoring doesn't come that easy to any of us in this country, but especially not to Wednesday births, the saddest, grimmest people out there. Make no mistake, we're the pits. If you've got people coming around to your house for a party, ask for birth dates on the door. Anyone says Wednesday, send them straight back home. Give them a goodie bag if you want. Don't let them over the threshold. They'll put on Love Will Tear Us Apart by Joy Division. During Truth or Dare, they'll ask questions like, what is your greatest unresolved trauma? Even as they leave, they'll say something like, you've got a lovely house. Wish I had Lurpak in my fridge, but hey, some people are just born to be own brand, I guess. But why are we like this? Are we all like this, Wednesday people? Or is it more just a me problem, as people half my age say? Well, for balance, I'm joined this evening by a fellow Wednesday's child, Esther Manito. Say hello to Esther. And as ever, the Singing Sisters are answers to the Jackson 5, without most of the members, but also without most of the scandals. It's Flo and Joan.
We have, like, had our fair share of plastic surgery and scandals and stuff. But
and my boob once fell out at the Super Bowl.
She means the kitchenware department at IKEA. Otherwise, we're not like them at all.
I want you back. For this episode, can you call us Woe and Drone?
Woe and Drone.
Yes, please.
We thought, because this is a woeful episode, it'll be quite full of woe, so we wanted to start with a good vibe to get people in the good mood.
Yeah.
It's called the Happy Happy Song. Here we go.
Happy, 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 nights and rainbow smiles, candy floss and singing birds, the smell of baby child. All these things are happy and never, never sad. Oh, what a lovely day, depression is a myth. Handing out sweeties to children who are sad, nothing here to worry about, it's a happy, happy song. Helping an old woman who's fallen on the floor. Oh no, she's dead, everyone's looking at me. They think I pushed the woman, the police are on their way. I need to camouflage myself or dress up like this bush. Oh no, the birds are pecking me and also it's my birthday. I'm screaming, no one's helping, I've got to run away. I'll stay in my house forever and this is how I'll die. It's a happy, happy, someone help me, happy, happy song.
That's happy stuff. That was Woe and Drone.
Over to the other side of me, Esther. I mean,
hello.
Let's get it out there. We're both Wednesday's children. I'm going to come on to talk about how I'm quite sort of downbeat. Have you ever felt like there's some sort of curse over you, that you're full of woe? Or is it just you sort of defy the stereotype?
I mean, I wouldn't say I was full of woe. I'd say I was full of being annoyed and fed up and angry. Yeah. I don't cry, but I'm annoyed.
Right,
annoyed
righteous woe.
And I do feel like I am quite cursed, actually. Basically.
the mood is not lifting anytime soon, by the way.
I want to tell you a little story about what happened to me. I was doing a gig and there was a stag do in the front row. Lads, legends. And they were very, very drunk, and the stag was wearing a veil. And I walked on stage, I was the first act of the night. All I said was, hello, and the stag leant forward and threw up everywhere. All across the front of the stage, across the tops of my shoes, bits of vomit in his veil, and I just thought...
That's the worst detail. You should never have vomit
in
the veil.
Yeah. And I just thought, isn't it ironic that right now, out there somewhere, is a woman on a hen do, sat with all her girlfriends, just going, oh, my God, I'm so lucky to have found the man of my dreams. My dad lives with me, and my dad is a 78-year-old Arab Muslim man. And I went home covered in specks of vomit, and he opened the door to me, and he just took one look at me, and he was like, I wanted you to be a lawyer or a doctor. He gets his English idioms mixed up quite a lot, right? Which is fair play, because they are quite nonsensical. And I was telling him about what happened with the stag do, and he was like, you know, these people, they really bugger my beliefs. Now, I know the idiom is it beggars belief, but doesn't it buggers my beliefs just make so much more sense to me?
I've seen some people out and about in town that buggers my beliefs, I have to say.
It buggers my beliefs. So I stand by that. So, yeah, I'm not a lucky person getting puked on. Woe is me.
Unlucky that you can be born on the third day of the week and then 40 years later someone chucks up on you. But this is the thing.
39. I love the way you said that and there's just, like, some women over there like, oh, that'll piss her off.
I took a big gamble on 40, I have to say. I'm 43. One thing I've mentioned a few times in this series is, well, yes, I'm a middle-aged man, I've got two children, and I think quite a lot about what I'm passing on to them, personality-wise, that is, obviously not material possessions. I'm a comedian, I'm already paying for the bloody heating, and I let them share a bag of Quavers recently, and it wasn't even the weekend. So to deal with the question of whether my sort of Wednesday woe has gone down to my kids, I'd like Flo and Joan to tee up what we traditionally call a fun little anecdote. And this one actually contains a joke. It's going to be an actual gag. So maybe this thing could incorporate that.
Sure. Take it away. Fun little anecdote, 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 fun little anecdote, and there's an actual joke. Fun little joke, little actual anecdote, fun little anecdote, Anna Carl Ryder Richardson.
Pretty much bang on. Thank you to the Flo and Joan too. So when my son was about 3 or 4, he used to hang out with the son of another comedian, a man called Alex Horn. Well, he was a comedian. He's sort of a game show host or something now. Alex is a great friend of mine for 20 years, but he sets a slightly intimidating example because he's one of these people who just do life really well. 3 kids, still got a wife. How'd you do that?
And now all this Taskmaster stuff, it just makes us look bad. It was much tougher for him when he had to do it freelance. He'd go up to people and just say, ring this bell as many times as you can in a minute. Most dongs wins. And they'd say, well, bus drivers don't really want you to do that. Also, also, who are you? In this period, our respective young children spent some time together. And one time, Alex's son told mine a joke. What flies in the sky and wobbles about? Anyone? Jellicopter. Very good, a jellicopter. Yeah, I wouldn't open with it. So that was the answer. What flies in the sky and wobbles about? A jellicopter. And my son, who was also four, said, or a doomed plane. Bad, right? So there's the difference between me and Alex Horn played out through our children at an alarmingly early stage. That was the first time I can remember thinking, is my kid all right there? But of course, at that stage of life, the stakes feel pretty low. Around that same time, I remember the boy finding a huge branch in a park and walking around with it the way that kids love to do, but he couldn't do his consonants properly at that point, so he's wandering around the park shouting, big dick, like strangers. That was a golden day for me on social media. That same summer, I took him to a city farm and he held a guinea pig and the animal handler said, OK, the main thing to do is not touch its eyes. And the boy immediately went, eyes, 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 and jabbed the animal in the eye. And the guinea pig made a noise, which I think will probably be the last thing I hear before I die. Last summer, I tried to book tickets for the same place, and even though the card details were right, my payment was rejected. But then in a heartbeat, the boy has got a smartphone, as I mentioned earlier in this series, and it's as if that small version of him, you know, never existed. Not long ago, I handed him his phone, and the background was this mad, like, swirling animation far beyond anything I've got on my own phone. I said, how do you even make your phone do that? And my son, patiently, the way you speak to someone whose relevance to the world is diminishing, he said, Dad, this is the modern world where all things are possible. So now that my son is at that level of awareness, I've got every reason to worry about whether I'm passing on my woe to my kids. I know that the doomed plane thing is something that my son picked up from me because I was exactly that sort of kid, prone to grim statements. There was one day at school we were doing Tess of the D'Urbervilles. Thomas Hardy, your classic woe writer, some really miserable stuff. He was a Tuesday child, but he would have fitted in with us. The teacher read this typically deterministic passage about everyone has a birthday. Everyone knows the date of birth, but we also have a death day, which is already out there, written in the stars, and none of us can know that. And there was this impressive hush among the year 11s, and I put my hand up and said, well, unless you kill yourself. And I'm pretty sure if you did that in school nowadays, there'd be parents in. There'd be a welfare officer. But this was the 90s. The teacher just looked at me and thought, he'll get straight A's. I did, by the way. Academic success was my consolation prize for all the woe, but we'll come on to that. I don't know how fun an anecdote that was, anyway.
Grim little anecdote, anecdote, sprinkle of death in this sinister anecdote, anecdote. Little anecdote, 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 anecdote. Are you all right?
Are you happy that we're here?
Am I happy that you're here?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely happy you're here. Whether anyone is happy is a bigger question, isn't it? What I like is sometimes you both sing different words, but then you, it sort of still is fine.
Did you criticise Tim Minchin like this when he was your music album?
Yeah, and that's why you only did the one series.
Yeah, that's
obviously, Esther, you've got kids as well, so what's your relationship like with just the whole idea of being upbeat and stuff? And
what, kids?
Yeah.
What, my kids?
Yeah.
Nah.
That makes me feel better.
Nah. No, they keep you humble, though, don't they, kids? They keep you grounded. If you ever feel like you're getting a little bit too confident, they will very much bring you back down to earth. I mean, my daughter is very into history. She loves history at school. I remember walking her home from school and she turned around to me and she was like, Mum, what did you used to wear in the Anglo-Saxon times?
Oh,
Yeah, wow.
My worst one of those is my kids asked if I was alive in the war, but Anglo-Saxons put that into perspective,
I
think.
I was doing a gig, there was a young girl in the front row, she was like 21 or something. I am 40, and when I said I turned 40, her genuine reaction was to lean forward and go, oh. I know, like I was some kind of rescue dog in a chat. Yeah, yeah.
Well, good luck with it. You can see why, of all my potential genetic legacies, woe is the one that I'm most worried about passing to my children. Neither of them was born on a Wednesday. That's a good start. But there's definitely other things that I have already transmitted to them. They are, and this is statistically unlikely, both my kids are left-handed when they could have just had their mum's much more useful right-hand gene. So even if they're not predisposed to be full of woe, they soon will be, because they'll live out their lives without having opened a jar. or used a corkscrew or got the lid off the milk. Yeah, you probably haven't thought about this. But the 90% of you in the room that are not like me, where are the lefties? Hey, that's your right hand, though, scab. That's what they want. But there you are. You heard at home how few that was, and that's because most of us die of packet-opening-related starvation if we live alone for more than 3 days. You don't know how we suffer as left-handed. Really, we should go on a protest march, but our placards would be all smudgy. What do we want? I can't read that now. Should have written in fountain pen. When do we want it? I'm going to be 10 minutes late. Actually, couldn't get out of my front door. What a combination. Wednesday child and left-hander. I've got the natural depressive tendencies of Vincent van Gogh, but I can't get the scissors around my ear. The thing is, you can't entirely change or escape the circumstances of your birth. You can't go back in time and alter those things. As Hardy himself wrote, I'm in a right mood, I've got to say. I'll paraphrase that. In a way, maybe it would be better if I lent into it, just allowed myself to be an agent of misery. God knows, plenty of comedians just adopt the most objectionable angles possible, and the audience bloody lap it up. How was the comedy show? Oh, the MC said my shirt was shit and my wife didn't love me. Amazing night. Maybe, so I'm thinking, I don't normally do this style of comedy, but I'm thinking about just being sort of mean and grim and gloomy for a bit and see, let's try a little bit of mean-spirited banter. You, where do you live?
Woolwich.
Woolwich? Yeah, it's quite nice these days. It's not easy. It's not easy. You, sir, what do you do for a living?
Library assistant.
Library assistant. Again, valuable. It's not easy. Like, to try and get the sort of appropriate levels of woe and negative energy into the room. As the audience were coming in, I asked a Wednesday's child question. What is the gloomiest thing someone said to you, like a parent or a respected friend or anyone, and did it turn out to be right? There's some fairly downbeat stuff on these cards. Someone's written, when studying at university in America, age 21, my best friend said, this is the best time of our lives. I took it to mean life would be entirely downhill from that moment. He was right. That's gloomy, isn't it? Where is that person?
Hello.
Hi there. How old are you now?
30.
30, so 9 years of disappointment since then, basically.
Don't tell my girlfriend.
Yeah, when did you meet the girlfriend?
3 years ago.
You met your girlfriend 3 years ago, but you would still say your life has gone downhill since 21.
I'd say we've plateaued. I had in the last 3. The downhill has stopped and on our way up soon.
Yes, I don't know.
Can I just say, darling, he's a keeper. Keeper.
Plateaued is as romantic a word as I can think of, really.
Save something for the wedding vows.
You can imagine the argument tonight. I didn't say going down, I said plateaued. What's not to love about the phrase even keel?
I love you, you're fine.
Yeah. This is interesting. This is a counterpoint. This person's written almost identical sentiment. Life only gets worse as you get older, so you may as well enjoy it. But then they've written, brackets, yes and no. Some things are so much better now, others not so much. So there you are, sir. You're only partly right to be depressed about your future. This guy's written, or might not be guys, but it suggests a man. No man on your dad's side of the family has made it past 70. I'm 48, fingers crossed. That's a potentially a long 22 years counting that down.
I'm slightly concerned that our last song this evening is actually called Everything Dies.
Look, we advertised well and we've delivered hard on that. I did some Googling of the whole Wednesday's Child phenomenon to see if I could find a positive spin on the woe thing, and this came up on one website. Wednesday's children question everything. This leads to them carrying the weight of the world on their shoulders, hence the woe. But it can also be a sort of superpower that enables them to do great things for others. Now, that is a bit more encouraging. I've never had a superpower before. Our genie did make me invisible for a bit in 2006, but possibilities are overwhelming. I just wandered around Aldi for a bit. Because I definitely have been somebody to question everything all my life, as we've heard a little bit already. Like many of you, if you're around my sort of age, I've witnessed enough in a lifetime already to feel pretty spun out by it all. In just a couple of decades, we've seen the rise of unimaginable digital technology, the fall of governments, the emergence of best of both, a type of bread which magically combines the grubby appeal of white with the kudos of brown. My brain is endlessly full of questions, and I think that can be very tiring, obviously, but if I've passed that on to my children, maybe I'm pleased about that. One day it could be a superpower of sorts for them, at least a good trait, a nice quality. And there's no doubt I have passed it on, even by the standards of kids. And even now, one of them has the ability to Google things. Mine are unbelievably inquisitive. Being with the two of them is like being in a press conference with drunk people forever. I came out of the bathroom not long ago, and they were there, prowling like paparazzi. Dad! 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 You know, if you've got children, you know the way children frame questions, the tone is like, no matter how urgent it actually is, their vibe is always, if I don't get an answer in the next 5 seconds, you've ruined my future. I said, how can I help? And at the exact same time, I normally go with how can I help with my children. It's, it means when I do have to give this up and get a job in the service industry, I'm already on the way. And at the exact same time as each other, my daughter asked, do you know what colour beetroot is when it's still in the ground? And my son said, what do you think Sadiq Khan should do about London's knife crime problem? I was like, I'll take these one at a time if that's OK. But you can't. They both plough on. It's brown. Beetroot isn't even purple. It's brown. There's been 42 blade-related incidents in London in the past month alone. Carrots weren't even orange at one time. It's a lie. Dad, we could arm the police, but that comes with its own problems. It's quite hard to think straight in the face of all this. Right, I'll put my trousers on and we'll see what we can do, I suppose. As I say, though, all this gives me the hope that they're growing up with healthy curiosity. And after all, perhaps it is a good thing to have, if not woe, at least a certain amount of circumspection. Life, after all, is full of setbacks and disappointments, whether we like it or not. Love goes wrong. People fall out with you. You lose your job at the deli counter after going mad and eating an entire ham in front of waiting customers. Little Mix's hiatus shows possible signs of being a permanent breakup. The phrase, your call is important to us, normally turns out not to be true. The dark chocolate version of the Mars bar is only available seasonally and at the whim of the manufacturers. I could go on. So maybe the responsible thing to do is bring your kids up with the awareness that there might be tough moments ahead sometimes. As with most aspects of parenting, I try to take inspiration from my own parents, but also from what I see people doing around me. And if you get in the habit of eavesdropping on conversations, which I have been for years now, you hear some pretty contrasting approaches to being a parent. When my son came to start secondary school, after the controversial open day, which I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, it was my job to drop him off at the gates. It's a pretty momentous occasion in a parent's life. The usual stuff, I guess. The much older kids, the noise, the mum whom I told she needed to change her entire worldview. I kept it fairly minimal, just told him to have a good day and that his best would always be good enough, this sort of stuff. But as I walked away, I wondered, have I done enough, really, for such a major dad-kid moment? And that was what led me to listen to one of the other fathers doing his first day pep talk. And as a result, I overheard something which I still think about this most days. It's a year and a half on. He got down at eye level with his son and said, hope for the best, prepare for the worst. What? What sort of thing is that to say on day one of big school? That kid's sitting there at 10:30 in the morning in geography thinking, what is the worst? Snakes coming out of the wall anytime soon. But preparing for the worst, at least a bit, is a sensible approach to an unpredictable and sometimes cruel world. I'm not saying you should carry around as much woe as you can in a sort of sad backpack, but aging, death, all the things that we ultimately face, they may be just a little bit easier to confront if you can at least mutter, "See, I bloody told you." And so, I mean, we've really mixed the positive and the negative in this episode, but I'd say it went more one way than another. Esther, are you feeling any better?
No. Thanks for having me.
Pretty deflated tone. And so it falls to Flo and Joan to play us out on a note which I suppose it's a choice, either dispels the remaining woe altogether or just alternatively celebrates it. Well, firstly, can we say an enormous thank you to Esther Manito?
Thank you!
Yes, as promised, this last song is called Everything Dies. Let's take it away.
Yeah.
In a bag.
All the things you love and cherish every day. Ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. All the smiles they bring, well, I'm afraid they're not always here to stay. So come over here, sit on my lap, and look me straight in the eye when I tell you everything, 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 everything dies. I tell you, plants die, friendships die, dreams die, Bruce Forsyth dead. Everything, everything, everything dies. Some people die in their sleep.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
And some fall off a ladder, get their head caught in a bucket, then fall in the road and get hit by a unicycle. Some people choke, some just get poorly. I'd do it to myself if I lived in Crawley. Everything, everything, everything dies.
I'll tell you again.
Bats die, cats die
9 times.
Blockbuster dead, the royal family's reputation.
It's dangerously close.
Yeah. Everything, 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 everything dies. And just because it happens all of the time doesn't make it any less sad. Boo-hoo. Sometimes people die and you're glad they're dead. And that's a very happy day indeed.
When your hamster pops it and everyone in your nan's knitting circle have gone.
Bye-bye.
It was nice to know you, Peggy. Nice cross stitch. Now I gotta sing myself this sweet little song.
Your heroes die, paint dries,
the comedy industry dead, our careers after the show dead.
Yeah, everything, everything, everything.
Newspapers dead, pandas close. When that guy gets to 70. Jeffrey Epstein, who knows?
Everyone who's ever loved you, everyone you've ever loved, we'll all end in the same place, 6 feet in the mud. Yeah, everything, 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 everything dies. See you in hell.
Well done, everyone. You've also been listening to Esther Manito. I'm Mark Watson. Thank you very much for listening. This is Mark Watson Talks a Bit About Life. Sweet dreams.
Mark Watson Talks a Bit About Life was written and performed by Mark Watson, Flo and Joan, and special guest Esther Manito. It was produced by Leanne Coop.
And it was an Impatient production for the BBC.
Legends.
And we've Conversations from a Long Marriage for Wednesday evening's 6:30 comedy.
Welcome to the Spark. I feel like the monkeys are juggling chainsaws.
They're juggling flaming torches, but they could just as well be juggling chainsaws.
The monkeys might be hypothetical, but the issues are real.
Part of what we need to be well is a world that we can feel that we belong to.
I'm Helen Lewis, back with a new series of big conversations, talking to people who bring radical new thinking to vital questions like when to quit, social prescribing, scientific fraud, and preventing suicide.
Small acts of reaching out, small acts of interrupting those thoughts could be life-saving.
The Spark starts next Tuesday morning at 11 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.